From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, gun legislation is on the move. The president supports men and women's sports on the anniversary of Title IX, and Israel is on the verge of a new government. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Tuesday of this week, the U.S. Senate voted 64-34 to take up a gun control bill that has been under feverish bipartisan negotiations. Text for the 80-page bill was released just an hour or two prior to the vote, and now the legislation is on a fast track, with proponents hopeful that it will be signed into law this coming week after passing the Senate and the House. Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri joined Family Research Council President Tony Perkins on Wednesday to talk about what's in the bill and why 14 Senate Republicans voted for it.
Senator, welcome back to the program.
Tony, thanks for having me.
All right, the bill was voted on by, it was voted on with just very little time to read it. Isn't that a problem?
Yeah, you'd think you'd want to read a bill pretty carefully before you vote on it, particularly one that affects people's fundamental rights. And the Second Amendment is a fundamental right. The United States Supreme Court has said that. It's right there in the U.S. Constitution. And listen, I mean, this is a classic Washington game. This bill was negotiated behind closed doors for weeks on end. Nobody could see what was going on. Nobody knew what was in it. And then about an hour before we voted, it gets dropped in our lap and we're told, vote it through and read it later. And I'm never going to do that. But just as bad as what's in the bill. I mean, the bill gives money to states that have these red flag laws where you can have law-abiding citizens have their gun rights taken away from them without a showing of a crime, without being convicted of a crime. 19 states already have them. Many of them do not have due process protections, Tony, and they're going to get funding out of this bill. And other states will be paid to set up their own red flag laws. So for that reason alone, I'm going to be a no.
So, Senator, correct me if I'm wrong, but the structure of these red flag laws, now I know they say it requires due process, but the structure of it appears to me that you're guilty until proven innocent.
Oh, that's exactly right. And the way that this works in terms of the procedure is that somebody can go into court and say that so-and-so is a danger and should have his guns taken away, and without the chance to defend himself in court or to have a lawyer present in court, that person can lose his Second Amendment rights. This is no crime, no conviction of a crime, just an right. accusation. And in some states, Tony, in some states, it doesn't even have to be a law enforcement officer or a mental health professional who makes the accusation. It can be a former boyfriend, a former girlfriend. It can be a former spouse. Right. It could be anybody, coworker. And this bill would reward and fund all of that.
Now, there's a lot of focus in this bill beyond the red flag laws to mental health issues. And I'm always looking for the unintended consequences of legislation that's passed so quickly, like this one. And my question for you, Senator Hawley, could there be an unintended consequence of this legislation of discouraging people who need counseling or mental health care from seeking that, fearful it could be used against them?
Well, I do worry about that, and I really worry about the interpretation of this bill. I'll just say that I've heard some of the bill's leading advocates disagree among themselves about what precisely is in the bill and how it works. That is not an encouraging sign. So this is very significant legislation. It's going to be the biggest changes to federal gun law in 30-some years, and it is being rushed through at the 11th hour, and what we do know about it, frankly, isn't good. And here's the other thing, Tony. What we need to be focused on here are the criminals. We need to be focused on gun crime, people who bring guns right. to crimes, people who commit crimes with guns. This bill doesn't focus on that. It doesn't do anything to make our streets safer or our neighborhoods safer or put more cops on the street. It does none of that. And to me, that's just a huge, huge missed opportunity and wrong focus.
And again, it also brings more of the federal government into the public school system with Medicaid and with counseling. And I mean, I think that could be problematic. We've got enough problems with the federal government in our public schools. This could make it even worse. In fact, I understand that there's language here regarding Hyde Amendment to keep the schools from doing what they've been doing and promoting abortion.
Yeah, I know that Hyde was a big sticking point during the negotiations, Tony, or at least that's what I'm told. Again, I'm not privy to any of this. We have to read about it in the newspaper. But I'm told that Hyde was a big sticking point at the end of the negotiations. And I come back to the fact that, you know, even the folks who are supporting this bill disagree among themselves on how it will work and how it will actually operate, what the implications of it will be. So I just, in this environment, when we are in the middle of a national crime wave, you have a bill that does not actually focus on crime, but instead makes changes to fundamental rights. Why are we doing this?
You're right. Absolutely. I mean, you're right. We're in the middle of a crime wave. As the former attorney general for the state of Missouri, you understand the effects of crime. We should be going after lawbreakers, not restricting the rights of law-abiding citizens. Senator Josh Hawley, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You can find out more about Josh Hawley when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, if you're looking for a reliable source of news and commentary from a distinctly Christian perspective, we invite you to join us over at The Washington Stand. You can find it at washingtonstand.com or follow the links over at tonyperkins.com. That's tonyperkins.com.
Religious liberty is something we often hear people say needs protecting. But what is it? Simply put, it is the freedom to choose your religious beliefs and to live according to those beliefs. At Family Research Council, we believe fighting for religious liberty is essential because it is a human right that all governments have a responsibility to protect. Sadly, not all governments do. Religious persecution is a terrible reality around the world, and so often the media turns a blind eye, although attacks on people of all faiths continue to increase in many regions of the world. As Christians, we look to Scripture as our authority, and in it we have a clear calling from God to pray and care for the persecuted church, the downtrodden, and those who cannot help themselves. Therefore, we must be advocates for those persecuted for their faith. Learn more about what you can do to help the persecuted and access Family Research Council's latest resources on religious liberty by going to frc.org/religious-liberty.
Do you and your family feel equipped to give a reason for the hope that you have in today's culture? The mission of FRC's Online Center for Biblical Worldview is to train Christians in advancing faith in their communities in the public square, as now more than ever we need to be grounded in the truths of God's Word. To access a variety of free resources rooted in Scripture on topics like voting, religious liberty, abortion, and much more, head over to frc.org/worldview.
Did you know that from as early as 12 weeks, and certainly by 20 weeks, an unborn child can feel pain? Did you know the issue of pornography is growing among women? Did you know that pornography, sex trafficking, and abortion are all linked and on the rise across the globe? Issues such as pornography, human trafficking, drug legalization, and abortion are all violations of human dignity and have resulted in the devaluation of human life in our culture. Family Research Council stands firm on the principle that every life has value, ought to be respected, and has been designed for a unique purpose. Educate yourself on the harms of pornography, human trafficking, and abortion so that you can offer hope and help. Learn more at frc.org/life.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Even though the Dobbs decision didn't come down by the time we recorded this program on Thursday, don't worry, we will be covering the Dobbs decision for you as only Washington Watch can, and it will likely be next week. On Thursday, though, there were significant developments in the fight for equal opportunities in sports for women. Thursday was the 50th anniversary of Title IX, and the Biden administration thought it would be a good idea to release a proposed rule adding sexual orientation and gender identity to their view of sex discrimination. In essence, they decided to honor women in sports with a rule allowing men in women's sports. Representative Mary Miller of Illinois joined Tony on Thursday to talk about the growing number of lawmakers who are pushing back on this issue.
Congresswoman Miller, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate your work.
Let me ask you this, Mary. What's your response on this day, the 50th anniversary, when we're celebrating the accomplishments of women in sports and in education, that the Biden administration chooses this day to announce a rule change that is, it's going to sideline women when it comes to sports?
Right. It's very offensive. The impact of it, unfortunately, the whole purpose of Title IX was to give our girls and women opportunities in education and athletics that would be equal to what the men had. And by them redefining sex as sexual identity, this is going to cause so much havoc. Number one, it's going to eliminate the athletic opportunities for our girls. It's an attack on parental rights. It's an attack on our girls' safe spaces, because now they're going to want, transgender men in the showers and whatever. It's going to affect any organizations that, are based for women, like women's shelters. It's attack on freedom of speech. We know across the country that children are being forced into coerced speech in light of pronouns and the pronoun police that we now have in public schools. And ultimately, it's attack on freedom of conscience.
The history, the legislative history behind Title IX, very clear. This was designed to allow women to have equal opportunities when it comes to sports and education. Now, the Congress was very clear about this. Congress passed this. Do you think 50 years ago when Congress passed this that they knew or they were anticipating or they would support the idea that men who think they're women would be able to compete against women and beat them, and that would be fair?
Well, absolutely not. And actually, last spring, the first bill I introduced is called Safety and Opportunity for Girls Act. And basically what it does is it makes clear that sex in Title IX is biologic and genetic. But I remember telling my staff that it wouldn't be long before someone was going to require a cat litter box in the bathrooms. And now we have furries and all this stuff. And I can't even fathom it, what's ahead if we don't fight back. Erwin Lutzer, a friend of mine, he sent me a text. He said, evil never retreats on its own, only when it's confronted by a more powerful force. And we need to use whatever positions we're in, whether you're a parent or a teacher, obviously us here in D.C., you're using the media, is to speak up and fight back. Definitely not a time to be passive.
And the good news is, Mary, that we see parents across the country as they have really grasped what is happening with their kids in the classrooms are right. Pushing back on this agenda. But they need to know. They need to know that this administration, for some perverse reason, is so focused on this that they won't let it go. And so when you talk about having to have a counterforce that's even stronger, this is going to take a lot of parents, churches, and pastors standing up to this destructive force.
And it's going to cost us something. And we need to face it that it's going to cost us, whether it's, parents having to go to one income or working out a schedule. Churches need to come alongside their congregants. Not everybody has the opportunity or is able to home educate their children, but they need to try to provide opportunities to get the kids out of these schools. Definitely speak up. Teachers, I'm afraid, I have friends and family that are career educators and they don't go along with this agenda. They don't go along at all.
Yeah.
It's offensive to them, but they're going to lose their jobs, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I was actually in Dallas last week talking to some teachers, and so thankful we have Christian teachers in the public schools, and we need to continue to send them as missionaries. But you're absolutely right. Our children, no. We need to pull them out. Churches can begin to set up these co-ops where they don't have to set up a formal school, but they can.
Right.
There's ways, and we've got some tools available for them to help rescue our kids. I want to ask you this, Congresswoman Miller, on a related note. Legislation was introduced yesterday that would allow adults to sue doctors who perform gender transition procedures on them. up to the age of up to 30 years after they turned 18. So this is children that are being, you know, led down this path. Yeah. Surgery's done. They realize later this was a mistake. This opens the door for them to take legal action against these doctors.
Well, that's great because it's child abuse. If someone wants to do it as an adult and pick up the financial tab themselves, that's fine. But number one, they're trying to force taxpayers to pay for this. They're lying to the children. I know I had a back and forth with Health and Human Services Secretary. I asked him, is it child abuse to chemically castrate a 12-year-old? He wouldn't answer me. And then I asked him if they would promise us that they wouldn't transgender children without parental consent. And he said, I'm not going to go down that rat hole with you.
Yeah.
But they need to be held accountable. They should be afraid of being held accountable because they are abusing children. They're lying to them.
Well, and I watched that exchange, and I want to thank you for being firm and holding the line. And I hope that we can raise up an army of moms to stand behind you as you fight the good fight on Capitol Hill. Always great to have you on the program, Mary. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Take care.
All right. Congresswoman Mary Miller of Illinois, great, great lady. If you live in Illinois, you got a great congresswoman, so be sure and support her and encourage her. Look, by the way, we talked about this before earlier in the week. While China's Navy is celebrating the launch of its latest and most advanced aircraft carrier, you know what the U.S. Navy is doing? Celebrating pride and preparing sailors with a Sesame Street-style video explaining how to use a person's preferred pronoun. It's insane. Well, look, the Secretary of the Navy needs to hear from you, and I've got a petition at TonyPerkins.com to the Navy, the Secretary of the Navy, Carlos Del Toro, and it tells him to focus on defending America. Go to TonyPerkins.com and send him the petition. All right, don't go away. We're going to Jerusalem next.
Would you like to spend consistent time in God's Word? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. FRC's 2-year Bible reading plan helps you to approach daily Bible reading intentionally. You will dive deeper into the nature of God and how His Word speaks into cultural issues of today. All wisdom comes from God, and He has given us the Bible as a way to understand the world. His Word is necessary in our lives, so much so that Christ said, "We are to live on every word that comes from the mouth of God." He calls it our daily bread because we need it daily to sustain us and nourish us spiritually, just like food does physically. Start this adventure today with Family Research Council. When you sign up, we'll text you with daily passages and questions that help prepare you for conversations with your friends and family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
Did you know that pornography, sex trafficking, and abortion are all linked and on the rise across the globe? Issues such as pornography, human trafficking, drug legalization, and abortion are all violations of human dignity and have resulted in the devaluation of human life in our culture. Educate yourself on the harms of these issues so that you can offer hope. Learn more at frc.org/life.
What is biblical masculinity? In our culture of gender confusion, there aren't many examples of godly manhood. Men, husbands, and fathers need to find a model of godly manhood, leadership, and strength. But where can they find it in our culture? Stand Courageous Men's Ministry was created to help men find this model of godly manhood and to develop a strong biblical character, cultivate positive habits, build and rebuild relationships, and make commitments that will move men closer to God's good purpose and design. Men who will stand courageous. Join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference to discuss critical aspects of masculinity. These conferences are led by men who understand the issues men face. They unpack our role as a defender, provider, instructor, and battle buddy so that we can make an influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Learn more and find a Stand Courageous event near you at standcourageous.com.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for tuning in on this Thursday. Be sure and check out the website, TonyPerkins.com, and sign that petition to the Secretary of the Navy. It's important that he hear from you. About a year after being sworn in, Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett on Monday announced that he would disband his alliance of eight ideologically diverse parties and send the nation back to the polls for the fifth election in 3 years. Now, yesterday, Israeli lawmakers gave an initial nod to dissolve the Knesset, approving it unanimously 110-0. Now, that's not the end of it. In fact, word is now that former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is working to form a coalition government of his own that would head off the fifth election in 3 years. Joining us now to talk about this is Chris Mitchell, Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News. Chris, thanks so much for staying up late there in Jerusalem and joining us.
You're welcome, Tony. Great to be with you. And it's a very, very perilous time here politically for Israel.
Well, tell us about it. All right. So there's been an initial vote to dissolve the Knesset, the parliament. So where do we stand right now?
Well, right now, after that initial vote yesterday, it goes to the Knesset committee, and they have to decide whether or not it goes back to the Knesset for two more votes. Now, that committee is headed by a Yamina party member, part of Naftali Bennett's party, and now he may slow walk it just a bit to give Benjamin Netanyahu more time to convince enough Knesset members to come from the majority back to the opposition. Now, he has 55 seats, Tony. He needs six to make a majority. So right now, the horse trading is going on and a lot of negotiations behind the scenes to see if he can convince at least six Knesset members to come over. And then, as you pointed out, that would avoid those elections, fifth elections within 3.5 years.
So, Chris, Naftali Bennett had a razor-thin coalition put together. What brought us to this point? What caused him to have to dissolve his government?
Well, actually, the three members of his own party from the Yamina, which in Hebrew means right, actually defected. And many of his members felt that ideologically he was going in a different direction than the way he campaigned. So there was one member several weeks ago that defected. That made it like a 60-60 split in the Knesset. Another member defected, but they were convinced to come back. And then actually the head of this particular Knesset committee, he sort of gave Naftali Bennett an ultimatum. Either you pass this particular law that was proposed in the Knesset, or he's going to resign, and that would collapse the government. So to preempt that, that's when Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid made this joint announcement that they're going to vote to dissolve the Knesset. But right now we're in this interesting period, parliamentary procedures, where Netanyahu has a small window. It's could be improbable, but it is possible that he could form a government. But it was this ideological difference of his own party members, I think, that really made the difference for Naftali Bennett.
You know, Chris, my observation, and I've been obviously tracking Israel for a number of years, but, you know, the last, decade, really, we've had these razor-thin margins. It's so much like what we see here in the United States, such a nation that seems to be divided. Of course, the Knesset, much more difficult to operate in because you've got all these different factions. You've got to pull ideologically diverse groups together to form this coalition government. I mean, are there any changes that have taken place in the last year that would change the outcome of an election that would give one party more seats than they gained last time?
Well, as you said, this particular Knesset, this coalition had eight parties that really were diverse all the way from the far right and the far left and an Arab Islamist party, believe it or not, associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. I think one of the main factors, Tony, in the last several years in these five elections has been Benjamin Netanyahu. If you look at the parliament, you could see that Israel is basically a center-right country. Now, there are several parties, right-wing parties, New Hope, Yamina, Israel Beitenu, and they are right-wing parties. But the key is they don't want to serve with Benjamin Netanyahu. And so if you took all those parties you would have a sizable majority, maybe 70 seats in the Knesset. But the key, the thing that really has stymied the political process here for the last several years has been the unwillingness for many of these former, actually some of them former colleagues of Benjamin Netanyahu to serve with him. If that can be somehow rectified or changed, I think you would see a much more stable coalition government here in Israel.
So, Chris, if Benjamin Netanyahu were to step aside, would that give his Likud party the ability to form a strong enough coalition to go forward?
It's an interesting question, Tony. It's possible, and some people within Likud, you know, maybe a year or so ago, that were advocating just that. But on the other hand, he's extremely popular with the Israeli people. In fact, if you look at the polling, by a 2 or 3 to 1 margin, he's the favorite to be prime minister by Israelis. And the Likud is by far the biggest party. They have, you know, 30 seats right now. The next party has about 17, 18 seats. And so he is such a still popular figure among Israelis who really want to see him, many of them, as the next prime minister.
Chris, very quickly, about 30 seconds, how can Christians that care about Israel, the peace of Jerusalem, how can they be praying right now?
Pray for godly leadership. Pray that it somehow... the Knesset right now, and all these machinations going on, many of them behind the scenes, would really be God's solution for this situation, because Israel is facing tremendous threats, Iranian nuclear deal, a two-state solution advocated by the State Department and the Biden administration. So pray for the peace of Jerusalem and for godly leadership here in Israel.
We will do just that. And again, Chris Mitchell, I want to thank you for staying up late there in Jerusalem and joining us. Always good to see you and talk to you.
Thanks, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I want to remind you that you can find uniquely curated news and commentary when you head over to our recently created Washington Stand news site. You can find it at washingtonstand.com or find a link at tonyperkins.com. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.